you so much, and good morning, everybody. So in drone operator lingo, a strike, a hit, is known as a bug splat. Maybe you've heard that before. In Pakistan, people have taken to constructing humongous photographic images of children, large enough so that they can be seen from very high up in the air by a drone with a caption saying, "This is not a bug splat." Now that image is not about whether the war is just, but about whether the means of fighting it is just. And we can agree, as Representative Holt said yesterday, that the struggle against terrorism needs to be recast in the language not of war, but of crime. In fact, quite interestingly, the French, because of their language peculiarity, have the ability to say something quite different about the struggle against terrorism than we do. In French, it's called the lutte contre terrorisme, and lutte means struggle. Perhaps a much more apt representation of what we are dealing with and what we have to deal with than war. However, even if we do agree with Representative Holt that this needs to be recast, that's largely a matter of policy and not so much law. So I will talk now about law because that is the language of those that are in charge of the policy. And I suspect that you're not going to like a lot of what I'm going to say about the law. Killing is not illegal per se in war, in armed conflict. And it's also not illegal per se in some situations outside of armed conflict. For example, in self-defense, or when a police officer kills a fleeing felon. So, you might disagree with that as a matter of policy, as a matter of morality, but I'm talking about the law. I'm not supporting the law. I'm not defending the law. I'm telling you what the law is. And it's important to know it, as I said, because that is the language of the policymakers. Killing is not illegal per se in war. And this has several consequences to some of the things that we've already been discussing and hearing about since last night and today. Kill lists. According to international law and domestic law, there is nothing per se unlawful about knowing the name of the person that is being killed in an armed conflict. Signature strikes. There is nothing per se unlawful about killing somebody on account of their conduct as opposed to their identity, of course, depending on what their conduct is. Collateral damage. There is nothing unlawful per se about civilian casualties in armed conflict. And it is important to understand the minutiae, the details of all of these separate and related facts of law in order to be able to advocate effectively, I believe, against the use of targeted killing. I want to spend the rest of my time talking about the two major legal, international legal frameworks that apply to targeted killing. One is the law of armed conflict, and the other is human rights law. And the differences between the two on questions of targeting are significant. In an armed conflict, you can legally target enemy combatants, members of enemy armed forces, and even civilians who are directly participating in hostilities, but only while they are directly participating in hostilities. That is the law of armed conflict. It's a rather broad killing authority. Outside of armed conflict, it's human rights law that applies exclusively. And human rights law has a much narrower scope of permissibility to killing. It can't be said that you may not kill people outside of armed conflict. Human rights law provides that lethal force may only be used when necessary to protect against an imminent threat to life that cannot otherwise be ameliorated. So even outside of armed conflict, the law foresees and permits killing extrajudicially under some circumstances. But the difference between the law of armed conflict paradigm and the human rights law paradigm is extremely significant. And therefore, it is also extremely significant and critical to be able to distinguish between whether killing is being done in an armed conflict or outside of an armed conflict. And this is one very significant area in which the United States, in the extent to which it has, through its authorities, explained its practice and explained its policy, has left us very much in the dark. And it has left us in the dark, I suppose, quite intentionally. Because to either confuse or conflate or fail to distinguish between what is claimed to be armed conflict authority and what is claimed to be outside of the realm of armed conflict enables the United States to operate in a gray area. And it is important to those of us who are advocating against targeted killing, I think, to be able to specify and to demand of the policymakers to tell us precisely, are you or are you not using law of armed conflict authority for your targeted killing in Yemen? If you are, who are we at war against there? And if you're not, then tell us precisely why you believe that the people we are killing in Yemen represent an imminent threat to the life of Americans that cannot be ameliorated otherwise. And while we don't know a lot about facts on the ground, there have been quite a few studies that have attempted, and with some success, to determine that whether or not we are in an armed conflict situation in a particular place can be determined. And if we are in an armed conflict situation in a particular place, whether or not the individuals who have been targeted are or are not members of enemy armed forces, are or are not directly participating in hostilities at the moment of their death. And if it's outside of the realm of an armed conflict, there have been investigations that have quite clearly shown that a lot of the people who have been targeted may or may not have been, and in particular, many of them have not been representing an imminent threat to the life of Americans. And even if arguably they have been, that there were many circumstances in which those individuals readily could have been arrested rather than eliminated. These are the kinds of details that I think it is necessary for those of us who want to be advocating against targeted killing to be able to hone in on in order to have useful conversations with those in power. I recall when Jay Johnson, who is now the head of Homeland Security, he was chief legal counsel in the Pentagon before he took this job, and I had a conversation with him about drone strikes, and his major talking point that I think he was most proud of was that, well, in the Defense Department, in the Pentagon, in our military operations, we always follow the law of war. He considered that to be a defense of the US government's practices. I consider it to be an admission of violation of the law. And the reason is simply that not everything that the military does happens in the context of armed conflict. There are specific rules to what constitutes an armed conflict under the law of war, And it is not because the U.S. has declared war against either al-Qaeda or terrorism more broadly. It is not because military means are being used. Rather, it's because there are either severe or intense or frequent hostilities between two armed entities that each have a command structure capable of applying the laws of armed conflict, whether they choose to do so or not. That's what constitutes an armed conflict. And if those criteria are not met, then you have no business, either proudly or otherwise, stating that you obey the laws of war. In those situations where the laws of war don't apply, then it is the less permissive rules of human rights law that limit who can be killed. In addition to this question of is it or is it not war, is it or is it not armed conflict, even within armed conflict, a serious dispute occurs about the propriety of targeted killing as to the specific targets. Is it or is it not a combatant? Is it or is it not a civilian directly participating in hostilities at the moment of their targeting? If you read a lot of newspaper accounts of targeted killing strikes, there are several words that you're bound to come up with rather regularly, like militant, like terrorist, like insurgent, like enemy, and my favorite one, bad guy. And you very rarely come up against the term combatant, but even when you do, it's used colloquially. There is very little in the journalism that we see in connection with targeted killings that even considers addressing whether or not the individual being targeted is in fact targetable. And as long as the general language of targeted killing continues to be focused on terms like militant, insurgent, terrorist, etc., it is creating an assumption and a false impression that anyone who may fall within those general and hard to define terms is conceivably targetable. And that's a flaw of journalism, but it's also a flaw of, I think, many of us who fail to distinguish the utility, who fail to apply or fail to know the law that is actually applicable to whether or not a killing is lawful under international rules. The question of civilian harm is another area in which the vocabulary, I think, fails us. We tend to hear and talk a lot about collateral damage and civilian harm. Civilian as opposed to what? Civilians as opposed to combatants. Well, as soon as you're talking about civilians and as opposed to combatants, you're talking about armed conflict. And once again, whether or not the rules of war apply to a particular targeted killing scenario is rather questionable. So while it's very difficult to get away from the terminology of civilian deaths, again, it is important, I think, for those of us who are doing advocacy in this area to understand when we use the term civilian, we actually create a risk of conflating war and non-war. Because as soon as we use the term civilian, we are implying a contradistinction between those people and combatants. Outside of armed conflict, you don't have civilians and combatants. Outside of armed conflict, everyone is a civilian. And so the use of the term civilian, while I have to admit it's very difficult to get away from, is something that we have to be very careful about. Even within the realm of armed conflict, the concept of civilian casualties is most often referred to in connection with people who were not intended to be killed, but were nonetheless killed in connection with an attack against someone who was intended to be killed. That's the concept of collateral damage. And whether we like it or not, the law of war contemplates and accepts the notion of collateral damage with the caveat that it has to be proportional to the military advantage gained in an attack. Again, this is a law of war framework, and it has no business being used outside of armed conflict. Now, even within armed conflict, this frame, though, neglects one very significant category of people who are killed and shouldn't have been killed. When you talk about collateral damage, the reference is, as I said, to people who you didn't want to kill, but you perhaps knew were going to be killed in connection with an otherwise lawful attack, and that is lawful under the laws of armed conflict, so long as the civilian harm is not disproportionate to the military advantage gained. But the one larger area of casualties that shouldn't have occurred that this formula neglects is the people who were intended to be targeted, but whose targeting was a violation of international law. So these newspaper accounts that talk about terrorists and militants and insurgents being killed, and the assumption that I think most people make when they read those terms is, well, those were legitimate. If, in fact, they were insurgents, terrorists, militants, then targeting them is legitimate. No. Targeting in an armed conflict is only legitimate against a member of the enemy armed forces or a civilian directly participating in hostilities at the moment of targeting. And I submit that the category of individuals wrongfully killed by targeted killing that consists of what we call pure collateral damage, in other words, individuals unfortunately but knowingly killed in connection with a lawful attack, is a much smaller category than the category of individuals intentionally targeted in violation of international law. So, what I want to leave you with are essentially these three concepts. One, the importance of distinguishing between what is and isn't war in accordance with definitions and distinctions in international law. Because when it's law of war targeting, then the lawful power to kill is much broader than when it isn't war. The difference between the application of law of armed conflict, which has a broad targeting authority, and on the other hand, human rights law, which has a much narrower targeting authority. The difference between what is and isn't war. Number two, the difference between what is and isn't a combatant. Do not accept terminology like militant, terrorist. Recognize and go forth with advocacy that hews to the concepts of international law, which narrowly define who may be targeted in an armed conflict as individuals who are members of enemy armed forces or civilians directly participating in hostilities. That's it. And finally, in connection with the concept of civilian casualties, I believe it's important to recognize and use in our advocacy The fact that it is not only women and children and old folks that constitute what we call collateral damage, but that there is also an even more significant number, I believe, of individuals who are wrongfully being targeted because they are falsely considered or falsely named to be targetable under the laws of war, even when they're not. Thank you.